This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 268, where we are recording live from the SharePoint Fest conference in Seattle, Washington.
Hey!
Oh, recorded live August 22nd, 2018. How's it going, man?
Very well, very well. Hi, you're in my neighborhood.
I am in your neighborhood. You know, I was a little surprised because, one of the big bits of news that you guys had last year was that you guys legalized marijuana, right?
Yes.
And so I show up and I see like this really thick cloud of smoke, and I didn't realize you guys were going to really just go whole hog on this.
Everybody's getting pretty baked right
man,
now.
Man, yeah. This place is crazy. Yeah. I can't believe how strong this really is, man.
Well, it's all coming down from BC, and they're also known for it. So.
Well, I didn't think that they were legal until October. So you're just taking it all over. No, you guys got some crazy forest fires going on in the state that are, it's made it, as you can't see, like I couldn't see like past the field and everything at the airport. It's nuts.
Yeah, it's nuts. We should be clearing out tomorrow. So yeah, we sat outside last night at a restaurant. And needless to say, I feel like I've been chain smoking for the last 48 hours.
Oh yeah, so, yeah. It was rough.
Hey, great to see you in person again. And good to have you in Seattle.
Yeah, man, it's fun. So we're sitting here, we're doing this show live in the expo hall, over in the corner of the expo hall, if anybody's interested. For the SharePoint Fest conference here in Seattle.
We have shirts.
We've got
bought a lot of shirts.
I brought a lot of shirts. There's a bunch of t-shirts over here people can grab. We got medium, large, and extra large. Anybody can grab a t-shirt.
Yep.
Stickers over there as well. So everybody that's kind of looking at us from the side, t-shirts over here over to my left, your right, where you guys can go grab this. But yeah, man, why don't we, what are you doing at the conference this week? What are you speaking about?
Hey, that man's got a t-shirt.
Oh, we got one t-shirt gone. First t-shirt's gone.
Bottle it.
These t-shirts have to go. I'm not taking these home with me.
No, that's a lot to carry home. Yeah. Yeah, so we're in Seattle for SP Fest. It's been here for a few years now, right? Dave, how many years have you been in Seattle?
Five years.
Wow, nice work. So I'm doing a session this afternoon on Microsoft Graph, and we're also a sponsor or exhibitor here, so... helping out a little bit with that, and there's a whole bunch of noise going on. Everybody's managed to descend on the expo hall, so just keeping an eye on what's going on. But how about you? You're also doing some workshops and stuff, right?
Oh my goodness, yeah, I had a hell of a schedule. I didn't really realize how committed I was until, well, the day before it was all starting. I had it started off on Monday with a full day workshop on mastering the SharePoint framework. Yep. Yesterday I did a half day workshop in the morning on Angular and SharePoint framework. I did a half-day workshop yesterday afternoon on React in the SharePoint framework. We're doing this podcast today. We're doing another one tomorrow. I've got a session later this afternoon on Angular in the SharePoint framework. I have a session tomorrow on being a ninja on performance of the SharePoint framework. And I have one more thing that I'm doing, which I'm the number two keynote tomorrow. There was a keynote today with Microsoft. I'm doing a keynote tomorrow. And I don't know if we should tell anybody, but I am like crazy anxious for this thing.
So if you're listening to this live and you're here at the show, then definitely feel free to heckle tomorrow morning is what you're saying.
Oh, no, man. Yeah, there will be, I wouldn't be surprised if you watch when like the keynote's over. I may have this, and if it feels like I kind of like rise off the stage a little bit, like I'm just, man, I'm so much lighter now. I feel like I don't have this like weight over me. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
But I'm sure you're going to crush it.
I'm just anxious on it. I'm anxious on it. But yeah, it's busy. I love this show. I did this SharePoint Fest last year. This Seattle show was the first time I had done it. It was a ton of fun. I love the energy, the way it's organized. People that run it are absolutely fantastic. The content, the speakers, the attendees, everybody's really engaging. It's a really cool venue, really cool setup.
Yeah, and it's also nice. We can go hang out after the show and socialize. We've got networking drinks this evening as well. And getting to meet local customers and partners and all that sort of stuff. So, it's a great event. And, back again for another year.
Absolutely. Yeah. We usually do in the show, kind of find out beginning of what you've been up to in the last week or so. I know we finally get back on track with our normal recordings and stuff after we both were over and around the world in a couple different places so much. So what have you been up to in the last week?
I've been geeking out on a whole bunch of code, actually. I'm taking a .NET application, .NET 4.5.2 application, and porting it to .NET Core.
Oh, are you? Okay,
so,
wow.
I'm learning all about .NET Core and .NET Standard 2.0 and building C# stuff on OS X or Mac OS and Linux and Docker containers and all that sort of stuff. And finding out, there's one lesson as a developer that's super handy to learn.
Yeah.
And you don't learn it until you've tried to port your code that you wrote to another platform. And then it really shows you learn a lot about yourself as a developer when you try to do that. And it's pretty fascinating because the certain spots where I've gone, what was I think? Why did I build that like that? Like, my goodness. Because, you know, there's some platform differences, like encryption APIs on Windows, right, don't exist in the same way as they do on Mac OS.
Right.
And so you've got to decide, how am I going to make it the same on one platform as another? And you learn where all the tentacles of your code are and how sort of platform specific they are and all sorts of deep, dark corners of your code. So yeah. I'm learning a lot about myself as part of this process.
So you don't have to share it with anybody, but just tell me because nobody's paying attention. Are you embarrassed? Are you disappointed in yourself? Or are you proud of yourself? Or
Yeah, I have moments of disappointment, but that's normal. I have that every day. But in general, it's gone okay, actually.
Yeah, good.
Unfortunately, nobody else is helping me, so they can't see how embarrassing it is.
How bad it was? I'm sure everything's going good with it. It's interesting. How do you like the, what's your experience, your feel for working with .NET Core? Do you like it? Or
I love it, yeah. It's great. I mean, I really love C#, right? And as a developer, I feel really productive with it, and I can get a lot done. And it's really nice to be able to use C#, but in a modern tooling stack, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so were you using VS Code? You're doing everything on a Mac?
Yep.
Doing it using VS Code?
Yep.
Already using for like your build stuff, using Gulp or using
Not that sophisticated yet. Yeah. Just using the .NET command line tools, the .NET Core command line tools for building and packaging and restoring all the packages that you depend on and stuff. So it's very similar to like the Node world in that regard. Gotcha. Yeah.
What's it like doing .NET like on a Mac inside like in VS Code? I mean, I've been doing JavaScript and client-side stuff inside VS Code. Now, we've worked in Visual Studio, but is it feel different? Does it feel the same? You didn't have to download, you know, a 2 gig thing.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I still think they've got maybe another couple of years of tooling progress to make. So, like, Visual Studio is a big beast, right?
Right.
But it is extremely productive in terms of what it offers and the debugging experience and the, you know, building code experience and things. And so there's still a bit of that missing.
Mm.
From productivity perspective, it's not quite there yet, but it's making great strides. So I think maybe in another year or 2 years, Microsoft's really good at developer productivity and tooling.
Oh, yeah.
I think they'll bring a lot of that to the Mac for C# as well. So
I hope, my only hope is that as they do that, and it's kind of seen they've started to make this, they've done a lot of this already, and I fear that it's going to get a little too extreme, is taking that lightweight editor that we have with VS Code and doing so many add-ins, so many extensions to it and everything that it gets really bloated. I mean, I noticed that my VS Code, I look how many extensions that I have, and it feels like I've got a ton of stuff already in there. It doesn't feel like it's too slow. I get this weird feel like when I open up some projects and everything kind of refreshes and opens again. I don't know which one's doing that. I'm kind of I mean, I like the fact that you can do plugins and extensions, but it also is like, maybe
don't
I can add too much stuff.
Too much. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So anyway,
that's been my life for like the last week or so. How about you?
Cool. So I was getting ready for this conference, and I spent a lot of time with Angular and the SharePoint framework. So for a long time, we've not really been able to leverage Angular and the SharePoint framework. We could do it, but the story wasn't really good. Angular 1, you could do it, but the payloads are really big. And doing it with Angular, the current version of Angular, like Angular 6, you would build a big Angular app and you deploy it inside of a SharePoint framework web part. It's kind of like your host.
Yep.
And still, again, it was gigantic. You also had some limitations you had to get around about one root module on the page, just know everything about it, the way that Angular is built. But back in May, what they did is they introduced a new development model called Angular Elements. And basically, it makes Angular development a lot more like React, where instead of building one giant thing that contains all this stuff, you're now down to just building components, the same way you do with React.
Yeah.
So last week, I spent a significant amount of time just going through that process, trying to find, you know, what's the best approach or what are the different approaches that people can employ to actually build these tools or build applications like this. Because some people don't like React. Some people have already got an investment in Angular, and they're like, I don't want to throw the stuff I've already done away. So came up with a couple different plans, models and stuff, and I shared it with some people yesterday in my workshop. I'm curious to see how the session this afternoon goes.
Yep.
It's pretty cool. I mean, you've got two options. One of them was, before it was, you know, doing an Angular Hello World app is going to be about 3 megs. And now I've got it down to about 74K.
Nice.
So it's significantly better, and it's going to get even better than that. So I know you and I, we're watching this as we're going on. We were supposed to be streaming this to Facebook
Live. Yeah,
we're
having some Facebook issues.
It still says that it's posting it, and it says that we're live, but as you can see on Facebook, we're not live. But
yeah,
we're live to everybody here.
We'll post it after the show.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
What do we got in store this week?
So we got a bunch of stuff. Before we do that, though, I thought we're not going to do our normal kind of cut in and splice in our advertisements here, but I did think that we ought to at least mention our sponsors. We got fantastic sponsors that are also here on the expo floor. Most of them are. They do a really good job of helping us, you know, to put this show on, to support the show. Between AvPoint is one of our title sponsors.
They're here at the show exhibiting. Go see them.
They are. They absolutely are.
Nintex as well.
Nintex is another one. They're here. The workflow company.
Yep. And Raygun.
Raygun.
Raygun.io or .com. Yep.
And you can use that at Hyperfish quite a bit,
we
right?
We do a lot, It's one of our kind of key tools.
So we thank you very much to our sponsors for supporting the show. It makes us do a whole lot of stuff and keeps the show going and makes it easier.
It's not
an insignificant cost to put this thing on. So,
not at all.
So hey, we got a little bit of news that we thought we'd kind of run through with that we go through today. That we normally do. I've got one thing right here. I see that you've posted something about Microsoft. Do you want to share that one with our listeners?
Yeah, let's see here. This is not your father's Microsoft, this is called. It's a post up on CNET by a guy called Ian Scher. And I read this article. It's quite long, but it's a really good read. And it basically goes in talking about how Satya Nadella has taken on Microsoft as CEO. And kind of what's happened since he's become CEO and the kind of changes he's promoted and pushed at the company and how that's impacted the company.
Oh.
And it's just a really, I thought it was a very well-written article that just talks about some of the stuff that he's done that's really shifted the culture of the company. Things like the hackathon the yearly hackathon that they do now, and he's participating in that, and how employees are made to feel like they can do this stuff. And just some of the changes he's made from the Ballmer and Gates era and kind of how that's impacted the company.
Mm.
It's just a great write-up for anybody who's sort of looking to learn a little bit more about the internals of Microsoft, I guess.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I have to go back and check that out.
A really nice piece.
Awesome.
We have another one here, which is on a slightly deeper topic. This week, Brad Smith, who's, I think, president of legal and corporate affairs at Microsoft. I think I'm getting his title right.
General counsel, something like that. President, you're right.
President. With a blog post titled, "We are taking new steps against broadening threats to democracy," now, I don't want to get all political as part of this, right? But I just felt it was really interesting that companies like Microsoft now are getting involved in this and saying, we run a really good portion of the internet, right?
Yep.
Their websites and all that, and Microsoft accounts and Outlook.com and Xbox and all this. And they are seeing things happening that they can help with,
mm-hmm.
right? So either hacking attempts or coordinated attempts on hacking other companies or organizations or candidates running for government in this case, things like that, and then getting involved and being transparent about what they're doing in these efforts to try and help combat bad stuff going on the internet.
Gotcha.
And so he came out. Now, the interesting thing about this article is this week they took control of 6 domain names that they got a court order to take control of, 2 of which look like Office 365 URLs. So like there's hackers out there trying to attack people with phishing attacks and social engineering attacks to get them to give up their credentials to things, right? And so you send somebody an email and you say, hey, your account's been compromised in Office 365. Click here to go and reset your password, right?
You're getting really good too.
And then you go to a website and you really quickly look at the URL and you're like, oh yeah, that looks like Office 365 because one of the URLs happens to be Office 365-OneDrive.com, not .OneDrive.com, right? So it's not a subdomain of OneDrive.com. It's just a thing that looks like it should be a subdomain of OneDrive. And then people will go stick their credentials in, and then boom, you're pwned. The hackers got your credentials, and away you go.
Yeah. Right?
So Microsoft took control of these 6 domains, and some of them were Office 365-looking domains. Like there was a hudsonorg-my-sharepoint.com, which we're looking, that's kind of the structure of where my sites sit in SharePoint Online.
Right.
And then office365-onedrive.com for obviously the OneDrive stuff. And there are also other ones that were pretending to be official looking websites for the US Senate, for example, and stuff like that, which people are more likely to put their credentials into things that look official and all
sure.
that. Anyway, so they took control of these domains and took them offline. But it's just interesting to see Microsoft getting involved with those kinds of actions on the internet.
Well, especially with the election season coming up in the United States this fall. So yeah, no, the midterms are showing up. So that's a, it's
yeah.
good timing.
Well, when you're reading a website, especially around stuff like this, you want to know that you're reading the official one.
Right.
And that it's not put up by some group that wants you to believe something else.
Right,
so
right.
I think it's great. The other thing they've announced is this initiative called Account Guard. So for certain government officials and for certain organizations and for certain folks that are running for office in the US, Microsoft are going to help them with monitoring their accounts for weird, illicit behavior going on and alert them to the fact that their accounts are trying to be hacked or their websites are trying to be hacked, all that sort of stuff. So
gotcha.
Kind of a nice initiative to help with that stuff.
Oh, very interesting. I saw you posted another link here about Slack. I missed this bit of news here. You want to share this with our listeners? This was kind of a whoa.
Yeah, so you hear about crazy fundraising. Slack just raised $427 million.
Series H. been at this a few times.
At a valuation of $7.1 billion.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That is absolutely incredible.
So 8 million daily active users, 70,000 paid tenants. So.
Interesting. Are you any of the paid tenants in Slack? Do you guys?
Yeah, we pay for Slack.
Oh, do you pay for Slack? Okay.
Yep.
That's interesting. Yeah. I'm not any of the paid tenants, but I found it was 8 million daily active users. Shows quite a bit of activity there. And it's, you know, I know that Microsoft has got Microsoft Teams and they're trying to push that as a Slack compete. To me, it still isn't really a Slack compete. It's more of a, you know, one pane of glass for all this Office 365 stuff.
Yeah.
And you can use it for the same kind of stuff that we use Slack for, but still 8 million people. I mean, that's quite a bit number of people that are still using it.
Yeah. So, an interesting thing at the bottom of this article says that Stuart Butterfield used to talk about the importance of becoming a $1 billion company, and now they've raised $1.27 billion in funding.
Golly.
So they've raised more than they used to want to be worth. I thought it was really interesting. Anyway, it sounds like they're doing pretty well, but still, it's still a drop in the bucket versus Office 365.
Yeah.
And I honestly don't think Microsoft has too much to be concerned about.
Yeah.
I think they're different tools for different types of companies.
Yes.
And there's not quite the same level of freak out that I think Microsoft should not be freaking out quite as much as they are.
Yeah.
But yeah, just huge news, over $7 billion valuation. That's nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah, that one point you mentioned too about them freaking out about being overly concerned about Slack or going at it with a compete. I would like to see the Teams group like stop, or the people who are like advocating Teams, stop treating it like a compete against Slack. Because like you said, you know, we talked about it on the show where, you know, Microsoft's position on what their target audience is for their products and what someone like Slack's target audience is for their product. They're different audiences. They're not going for the same thing. They're going much more for the enterprise. For, you know, very small businesses that are doing lots of work with a bunch of different organizations. I mean, I know that Teams has guest access. I mean, it is possible to have guests come in. I mean, I've tried to set up in my tenant. It kind of works. It kind of doesn't work. And it's like there's 10 different knobs you got to do.
Can you see the scars?
Oh, gosh.
From where I've stabbed myself with my pencil while I was trying to get somebody into guest access in 365?
I've tried multiple times. Finally got it set up. I have one person in and I have another person who it's impossible to get them in. I keep saying, nope, sorry, not a problem. I keep open up a ticket and they're like, no, everything looks fine over here. Clearly it's not.
Yeah. They're trying to get better.
They're trying to get better. They are.
No,
they are.
Better,
they are. Anyway. But it's different.
We digress. Anyway, Slack's raised a whole bunch of money, and they're worth a lot of money, and they're gaining users rapidly.
Absolutely. I saw a bit of news here from in the Azure space that, so they have, in the AI space, they have a video indexer. I don't know if you saw this from one of the last Build or Ignite conferences.
Yep.
I showed them. What this is that you can upload a video to this video indexer, and it can go through and look at not just the audio side of it, but on the video side, to do things like looking for certain metadata for keywords that are being repeated over and over, or for certain things that you're trying to be able to create text transcriptions and be better in search.
Yep.
Has the ability to also do like celebrity detection. So if you're looking at like a keynote and it sees in the video, detects like Scott Guthrie.
Definitely just pick you up in this video.
No, I won't pick me up. Too shiny. It's got like the shine factor right there.
Nice.
But then you can do those kinds of things. What they've done is they released a new API, a new REST API that you can take advantage of to programmatically add stuff. And part of this update that they did, they also uploaded published a Flow connector and a Logic app so that you could, with a, what do they call it, like a recipe or a template that they do in Flow, where you can say, I want to start with this.
Oh, yeah.
And yep. it's got a whole thing where it's set up where you can take a video that you've uploaded to OneDrive, yep. and it can pull that video from, once it hits OneDrive, pull that video out, send it to the indexer, hit a callback URL once it gets everything, and send you a JSON object, JSON document, with all the information that it's done parsing that document.
Wow, that's cool.
This article walks you through all the pieces of using that, what you can do with it, and how to set it up. Pretty cool.
That's really nice, cool. Yeah. I can imagine companies that recording internal training content with video or, you know, announcements from their CEO or exec team or management or whatever, putting it through that, using Flow to do that, obviously, and pull a little metadata out of it, yep. searching and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Speaking of AI, Microsoft on the machine learning blog has announced a new thing called the Microsoft AI Idea Challenge. So if you've got some really cool ideas on uses or, you know, applications of AI technology that you've thought about that you want to go and submit to this challenge, and they're giving away a whole bunch of nice prizes. So things like Surface Book, drones, Xbox One, stuff like that.
Gotcha.
So you can go up here, and it runs until October the 12th, I believe, from now until October the 12th. And so you go submit your model, a data set to run it over, and a demo app to show your idea off. Mm. And so they're giving away some prizes to the coolest ideas. And no doubt there'll be a bunch of PR and stuff that goes with it if you win.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. There's another little bit of news, Azure news that I saw this week. So there are, you know, a couple months ago, maybe it was 6 months ago, where they published for a service, a hosted services or a PaaS service for MySQL and PostgreSQL. So before it was just SQL Server databases that you could take advantage of inside of Azure. And then we had other storage options as well. But two other options that are really popular, like in the WordPress space and other like node-based developers. I know you guys use Postgres at Hyperfish.
Yeah, Postgres, yep.
So what's nice about this is that one of the things that they've announced with these two is they've announced a VNet service endpoints have now gone into GA for these two types of databases. And what this is going to allow people to do is to segment access to their databases based on a subnet that you set, a virtual subnet you set up inside of Azure. So you can say that I only want my website to be able to get to this database, or I want the website running in Azure, or I only want these on-prem things to be able to get access to these things. So there's a bunch of updates they've done there.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Yeah, that's really important to a bunch of companies that are building solutions in Azure. And a lot of them, one of their critical pieces is they want to keep a bunch of those services off the internet,
right,
and private. And obviously VNet's really key to that. So that's super nice.
Yep.
I got one here from the Teams team around the dev tools that are, what they've done is they've exposed, you know how Teams client is a Electron app?
Yes.
Right? So it's running Chrome,
yep,
as the engine in there. And when you're a developer and you're building things that go into Teams, often you'll want to be able to debug them and see what's going on and all that sort of stuff. And so what the Teams team...
That messes me up every time.
Isn't it?
I hate that.
Teams desktop client have now enabled the Chrome DevTools available. So it's now accessible from the Microsoft Teams client. So if you're building stuff, you can go in and there's now a menu to go open up the DevTools. And you'll be able to get into the, you know, the regular Chrome DevTools. You can see all the markup and what scripts are loading from where and all that. And this is really important for, you know, being able to triage something going wrong and then add in, or a thing that you've gone and added to Teams and be able to sort of diagnose what's happening.
Oh.
So a nice little development for devs there.
Absolutely. That is cool. Hey, I've got one. This is interesting. This one hasn't gotten as like widespread as much press on this bit. It's a feature we haven't discussed much, really at all on the podcast. And frankly, I didn't realize it was public, or that this thing was public yet. We had heard about it a couple months ago, but I thought that they were waiting to announce this stuff a little bit longer. But and again, I found this popping up on the Microsoft Graph blog, so it must be public
now.
It's okay now. So
take taxis.
So the title of the post is Managed Access to Microsoft Graph Data in Private Preview.
Hmm.
So have you heard about this? You know what this is?
Vaguely,
okay.
Code words for it.
Yeah.
Things. I think that's where this is going.
Yes,
right?
That's where this is going. Yeah, I'm not going to use the code word because I don't know if that's public
or not.
Might not
be. Yeah.
But so what this is that this blog post is explaining what this new product or what this new feature is, and you know how you have, you know, the Microsoft Graph has got, you, let's say you're an organization that's got, your organization is in Office 365.
Yeah.
So we have things like a ton of email. We've got a ton of, you know, calendar meetings in there. We've got a bunch of data that you've worked on inside of Office 365 and OneDrive for Business. your contacts. It can do like, you can check phone calls, like if you're doing calls through like Teams, those different meetings. You have all this data, but if you want to do any kind of like analytics on it, like, you know, Microsoft does with Delve, right? Or that where they check, they give you the kind of the
activity
small activity
stuff.
And the instrumentation, or not instrumentation, the analytics of your activity throughout the week and stuff.
Sure.
So what if you want to do something, you want to build some sort of an application using this kind of information? Well, today it's kind of tough because you have all this data and you want to be able to do your different, you know, calculations or different kinds of roll-ups and stuff on that data. And today, if you're going to do that, you could use the Microsoft Graph to call that data live against Office 365.
Yeah.
Maybe you build something in Azure that's going to go slice and dice it. But that's not always the best way to do it. That's not a very efficient way to do it. You want to be able to take that data. Wouldn't it be nice if I could take it and extract it out of where it is into some sort of a model that I could then mess with to get some, to do slice and dicing, maybe run it through different Azure artificial intelligence services that we have to do things.
Yeah.
So what this thing is, it's called, what this managed access is this is effectively allowing you to take a corpus of data from through the Microsoft Graph that you have access to from your organization, pick it up and drop it over inside of Azure, right? Mm-hmm. Once that's done, you can do a significant amount of slicing and dicing of that information. So take, for example, like I want to build a solution that is, say, a knowledge management or a skills assessment thing to be able to find other people in my organization who's done these kinds of things. So what I could do is I could use something like this to take this data, take emails, for example, or documents I've worked on.
Yeah.
I can pull that metadata out, stick it over here inside of Azure into some sort of a data store, maybe using Data Factory.
Yeah.
And then I can run different analysis on it and see like, oh, this person talks with a high sentiment analysis on these different topics, or very negative on these other ones.
I
or I can see a lot of people in the organization are going to this individual and they're always talking about this thing. And so what you can do is be able to kind of deduce that we have a subject matter expert on this one thing. Maybe it's not stuff that's related to what the company does, like the main line of business, but they're a resource in something. Like say, for example, in your organization, you know, maybe it's somebody who's really good at doing, you know, certificates on macOS. If you talked about reporting and stuff, you can say, oh, look, we have somebody who's actually done emails with this.
Interesting.
So there's a couple main precepts to this feature that they have that they talk about. One of them is granular consent.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, this is super important, right?
Yeah.
'Cause you don't want just blanket access to all data.
No, you don't. You think about it too. You don't want to be able to just take that data out using the Microsoft Graph out of Office 365, drop it into Azure, or maybe take it somewhere else, because that's, you know, corporate information, a lot of really important stuff there.
Sure.
So what you can do is it gives you the ability to have granular consent to make sure that you only have access to certain things, the people that are running this, that you can't pull everything out. It's not just one big export. You
can types of data?
Types of data, yeah. You can also do with data governance and making sure that things aren't kept in this other store for a certain amount of time. So you can go through and purge it out over time.
Huh.
Gives you scalable access to the data because you think, you know, a ton of people hitting the Microsoft Graph, you know, one time. You guys do a little bit of banging away at the Microsoft Graph.
A lot.
It might not be the most efficient way to be able to do that slice and dice. So it's
absolutely
like, let's take it out and let's actually analyze it over here.
Hmm.
And the last thing is being able to leverage, like they say discrete Azure services, but they've got some things that are already hooked up and set up with it to say, we're going to use Data Factory to pull that data out. They've already pre-configured a lot of the stuff for you to make it easy. So what this blog post is about is really saying that they've opened up more to a private preview. That makes sense. Opened up a private preview. So customers that think that they could leverage a tool like this in their organization, they can apply to get access to it and be able to start playing with it before this reaches general availability or a public preview.
I see.
So I have a link to it.
My understanding as well is it's not sort of open to third parties.
No.
So like the customer has to be, it goes into their Azure tenant, for example, I think. This is my understanding of it.
Yeah.
It stays in their control and it's not something you can just sort of willy-nilly go, oh, whoops, I accidentally consented some random app on the internet to go and download all my corporate data from the graph.
Right. Your data, they will help you move your data over into Azure, but it still stays behind in your own tenant.
Yeah.
And it is for ISVs, where an ISV could build a solution that then they could take advantage of, but they don't, their code is running inside of your tenant.
Yep.
Your data stays inside your tenant, so they're not being able to extract it to take it.
Yep.
Maybe you can do things like some of the other scenarios. I've talked to the team a little bit that's doing this recently, and some of the other things that they're looking to, that some scenarios they can, that are enabling, is to be able to say, let me look at that, at all the resources that we have in our organization, like meeting rooms, and I can see how often certain meeting rooms are being used that have certain devices in them. And so if I can see that this meeting room has one of those, you know, nice Polycom phones, and it's got, you know, good whiteboard up there,
it's
with the
windows
camera. Can you see from the outside, or does it need to be inside? Who's using that stuff? And you can build some sort of a solution that slices and dices it and says, well, we can do building management, facilities management, see here are your needs for this new building.
Yeah.
This is a kind of a tool. This is a kind of a thing that they could use to be able to get that data and run that kind of analysis much easier without sharing that data outside the organization.
It's going to open up a ton of really interesting solutions that people can build, or apps that people can build to go and analyze that data. And it'll be really interesting to see what people build. Like, I can imagine a lot of stuff around, resource planning in organizations, skills and expertise, project management, you know, resource planning from a, who have we got in the organization? What do they know?
Mm-hmm.
Where are we sort of short on talent? Where have we got too many people? You know, all of that sort of management and planning aspect, I can imagine is really interesting data in there for that.
So get this, think about this for another scenario for this. So I've been working with the team, and I'm actually working on a little bit of content for this, a little lab to kind of to help people actually use this. Think about this as a scenario. So something that is, because Graph has access to not only your email, but also like the CRM, it can detect, by taking this stuff in like a constant feed and running Azure App and artificial intelligence on it, you can do stream analytics on it. You can also do things like, you know, using Lewis to do like text analysis,
right,
and natural language parsing to look at it and say, hey, we can tell that based on the communication that we've been having with this potential customer, with this lead, that, you know, the likelihood of being able to close this customer is like an 80% or 70%.
Yeah.
But if they start seeing negative communication going on between the customer and back to the company, then you can start to say this deal is at risk, and it wants to raise certain flags and bringing other people into the deal and stuff without a person having to go through and to do that. They just kind of monitoring what's going on. That, I mean, you can think about this, can get really scary with the whole Big Brother thing and say, watching my email and telling me, hey, you know, it's, you talk to this person and you and CJ email each other, and then John Doe emails CJ and, hey, Andrew, we've noticed that your communication with CJ doesn't look to be nearly as positive as John Doe is. Other people get along with him just fine. What's wrong with you and CJ?
You could,
this would enable that kind of a scenario, right? But
I was thinking a really interesting one would be, so, you know, one of the biggest problems with CRM systems is people don't stick enough data in it, right?
Yeah.
And so if I'm an account manager working with my customer and I don't have all of the insight about what's going on with that customer, I'm kind of at a disadvantage when I go talk to them about how they are and all that. But it'd be cool to have an app that took all that data and aggregated it, so I go, oh, actually, you know, we're in a big customer,
mm-hmm,
or in a big organization, and AC is off doing some consulting work and chatting with some people inside that company on email. It'd be nice to know that as an account manager and see that sort of activity going on across different, Skype or Teams or email or what have you.
Yeah.
So I've got sort of a better view of what's going on in my account.
Yeah, I mean, you can sit there, if you're working on an account with, you know, Contoso, and you're trying to close a deal with Contoso, and you use a tool like this and find out that, hey, look, we can tell that, you know, Andrew's in our organization. He's not even part of this deal, but he's got some really good relationships with these people over at Contoso about other work that he's done with them. So it's some really cool stuff that you can do with this, on where you can go with it. One thing you said that I wanted to mention it occurred to me when I started hearing about this tool, coming up with the different ideas and use cases of where this would be interesting and what you could do with this, the things that we've just kind of talked about, that's all fine and good. But what's going to be really interesting is the stuff that you haven't thought of yet.
Oh, yeah.
So I remember this ad that Xbox ran back at Thanksgiving. It was one of the best ads I'd ever seen. And it was when Kinect was put out, and they showed, we're using Kinect. We put the software development kit out for Kinect, and here's all the different ideas on what we were going to do. But the most important stuff that we saw was the stuff that we didn't think about. And the ad was just about what other people were doing with Kinect, from doing like bomb, using it for walk, going through a building that is filled with smoke and trying to find people that are in there, instead of having a firefighter go through and do it, having another one where people were practicing surgery on a mannequin or something.
Yeah.
The scenarios they were showing were awesome. That's where this is going to be interesting. What can you actually do with this? And what are people going to share with what they're doing with this?
Yeah, for sure.
It'll be really interesting.
Actually, speaking of Kinect, on my trip back to New Zealand recently, I was checking in for a flight in Auckland, a domestic flight, and with Air New Zealand, and I noticed it's all automated there. There's no counters anymore for Air New Zealand. You rock up to a kiosk, you do your check-in thing, you take your bag over to this other thing, and it scans your boarding pass and all that, and then you put your bag in the hole, and off it goes. And I saw, as I was putting my suitcase in there, I saw a Kinect built into like the hole that your suitcase disappears off through. And so they're using Kinect to scan your bags, I guess for like size and shape and all of that sort of stuff. I don't know. Like, I guess they get the weight and then the size and the shape of it, and they use that to sort of on the fly, I'm imagining, use it to on the fly calculations of like, well, it's going in this plane, and so we've added this much weight to it, and it's got to go into this canister because it's this size.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just that's cool. Use of Kinect, yeah.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Anything else for us?
Yeah, I got one more thing here. There was recently a blog post about the site designs and site scripts for an update that they did, their summer 2018 update. Are you familiar with these? We haven't done a show on this. I think we should really do a show on this.
I vaguely know about this stuff. I'm not really super across it. So
you know how we have, one of the things that people need to do is that when you stand up a new SharePoint site or organization wants to stand different sites, we used to use like site definitions. We used to use site templates, go through and structure those. And it was all a very declarative way of doing it, but it was still also very challenging way to build those structures out.
And feature so, XML and, and like CAML and all the good stuff.
Did you ever do a custom site def?
Oh yeah, all the time. God,
all the time.
I'm responsible for a whole bunch of really bad migration problems.
Actually, I am too. For one company, I am too, but we won't go there. What the site design scripts, what it allows you to do is there's a JSON structure, and you can basically define your the way you want the site to be, like your desired state. And you can use these scripts to go through and to run it, to use that structure to go through and to build out your site and design your site and everything. And there's some pieces you can do, you know, full blown, or you can do little pieces to it. So they can be things that can be run from SharePoint to go provision new things inside of SharePoint.
Yeah, gotcha.
The summer update focuses on adding a handful of new script actions. They are adding a principal to a group. So use that to manage users and groups. You can remove a navigation link from your SharePoint site or to create a site column with XML.
Oh yeah.
So just very common stuff. There was a presentation recently that I saw on by Sean Squires at Microsoft, who's the guy behind this, one of the guys behind this. He did a presentation last week, I think at one of the bi-weekly or the weekly or monthly SharePoint development calls. And he was saying how, you know, they've got a lot more stuff coming at Ignite and stuff, but this is a huge thing. People that are provisioning sites, really cool. They're loving this stuff. The one thing that I would love to see them do is, and someone has kind of done a browser-based version of this, is coming up with a designer, some sort of a designer to generate those JSON structures. Because right now, these are things that you would have, like, you know, IAs, our information architects are going to want to do this.
Yeah.
Maybe some power users are going to want to build sites out using these things. But this is a developer tool.
SharePoint design is coming back. I can feel it.
Oh, God. Is it going to be free, though?
Wait, hold on. It's free? All right.
So that's all the news that's fit to print this week.
That's a bunch of good news.
It is a bunch
that's
of good news.
Good Azure stuff, Office 365 stuff, some nice Microsoft bits and pieces.
But we're not done.
Nope.
We got one more thing we got to do here. We got to go through some. How about some picks?
Yeah, let's do it.
You want to do one first?
Yeah, sure. So on the topic of converting .NET projects, .NET framework projects to .NET core projects, I actually watched Scott Hanselman do a live YouTube video broadcast where he was helping convert a Salesforce like client library or something like that and a bunch of test projects to .NET Core, or to target .NET Core, so people could .NET Core could use the SDK.
Okay.
And he mentioned a tool that I have felt extremely handy this last week, which is about, it's a community project, I think it's a community project, it's a bunch of commits, that helps you take the old project CSproj format files and convert them to the new Visual Studio 2017 project file format.
Okay.
And so it's a little command line tool, you go run it and it converts your project for you. Goodness knows why this is not like a right-click convert my project in Visual Studio. I have absolutely no idea.
That's crazy. I'm surprised that somebody had to build it.
It's super weird. It's like, So when you're in Visual Studio, if you're in big Visual Studio, and you open up an old project, you right-click on it, and you can get it to all the settings and all that sort of stuff, but there's no edit my project file without unloading a project and going and editing it and hand-editing it and stuff. Once you've upgraded it to a new style project, you can just go edit that file and it's got all your NuGet stuff is in there and all your packages, and it's a much better way to do things. But so they don't provide a conversion as far as I can tell, and as far as Scott Hanselman knows, not possible either.
Yeah.
I guess if you're also doing it on a Mac, that's not going to be possible anyway from Visual Studio. So anyway, there's a command line app called CSproj to VS 2017.
Very
it's a little command line app that'll help you convert your projects to the new format if you're doing .NET Core conversions.
Gotcha.
Actually, it doesn't even matter if you're doing .NET Core conversions. any sort of upgrade to the project structure.
That's cool. That's a cool thing. We'll have that link definitely in our show notes. So I saw a link that I decided to throw in as a pick, and I saw this right before we sat down here. You familiar with the conference Black Hat?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's where, like, you know, hacker security and all that kind of stuff. The title of this link is article is A Legacy System Exposed Black Hat 2018 Attendees Contact Information. So get this. What this guy did is he went through, he grabbed a, they have a little RFID name tags. So what he did is he found the app that they use to scan it that has a their name and their email address all in clear text and some of the scrambled information also on that badge. So he found the app, and then he reverse engineered the app, and he looked at the source code of the app, and he found the endpoint that they were going to when it scans it, to go get the information for the person. He found that endpoint, he went to it, the endpoint is not rate limited, it's not secured, it's wide open and not, or it was, it's out there now.
Yeah.
And this guy went through and picked, and went through all these different enumerations of all the unique IDs for people at Black Hat, and he pulled down all the contact information for a couple hundred of the attendees that were at Black Hat.
Brilliant.
Now, there's nothing that was really sensitive that was stolen, just names and email addresses, so contact information. But for an organization that is all about security,
yeah,
and that prides themselves in, like, you know, good OPSEC, yeah, right? This is a little embarrassing.
Awkward.
Yeah.
That's, you know, it's got to be terrifying though, right? When you invite 200, like, people that love finding holes and stuff to your conference.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're going to be trying to hack your Wi-Fi and get into your attendees. I wonder if any of them have actually paid for the conference, right? Because they probably, you know, done their own thing with credit cards and, you know, all that sort of stuff to get it for free. But it's got to be terrifying inviting those people into your house, so to speak.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They're going to find holes.
Yep, yep. Cool.
Anything else?
Well, you got one for us, right?
Yeah, sure. Mine's actually a tweet from a guy, a Scotsman called Scott Manley. His voice
Scott
is awesome.
Manley.
I am Scott Manley. Anyway, he's a YouTuber and broadcasts stuff on YouTube records stuff on YouTube about video games and all stuff, lots of space related things, all that sort of stuff. He came out with this tweet the other day that I thought was absolutely hilarious. It made me want to laugh out loud. We'll link to it in the show notes. He says, important notice to developers of software that's going on Mars spacecraft. If you are developing a daemon, try and name it something like Mars Automated Telemetry Transmitter, so that when you upload it, you can say that you just sent Matt Damon to Mars. I thought that was really funny.
That's really good. That one's really good. And I mean, you went with the space one. I got to go back on the space one as well. I'm going to go to Mars as well. Have you ever wanted to build your own Mars rover?
Yeah.
Have you ever wanted
built my own Mars rover?
You have?
Yeah, with Lego, Lego.
I have the same one. Yeah, the little guy that's kind of like with Curiosity.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, did you know that you can actually do it now? You give an open source rover. So now, if you go to opensourcerover.jpl.nasa.gov, you can design and build your own Mars rover, and you can then run it through a little simulator and drive it around on the surface of Mars. And all the source code for this is available up on GitHub.
So it's an online app.
It's an online app.
You design your rover online as well.
Yep.
And then go run it through this sort of simulation and stuff like that.
Yep. So you can build your own rovers. This one's got a little smiley face on it.
Wow.
You can choose the, you know, different legs that you want to end up using for this, how you want to do steering around corners and everything, and then you put it on the simulator, and then you can drive it around and see how it goes.
I want my kids to try this out. I reckon it'll be really fun.
We need to write the Matt Damon software, though, and put it on this.
Yeah. There you go. That'd be perfect. Yeah.
Cool.
Excellent. Well, so I think that's it for today, right?
I think that's it for the day. It kind of wraps us up. We have about 5 minutes left, but no sense in filling it up until we've got the time.
And we'll be back again tomorrow.
We will be back.
Doing another show.
We'll be back in tomorrow. Hopefully we'll have the YouTube streaming will be, YouTube will have their streaming thing. Facebook will have their streaming thing, and Zoom will get that all sorted here. But yeah, hopefully that'll get sorted really quick.
Good luck with your sessions and keynote, and we'll see it again tomorrow.
Absolutely. And if you, it's same to you. And if you're at the conference, please make sure you stop by. We have more t-shirts that we have got to get rid of because they are not going home with
Correct.
Me. We've got to get rid of these shirts.
Yeah. You really don't want to take them home.
No, man, this thing, you saw me like struggling to get in here. That's a heavy bag. It's a really heavy bag.
All right, well, good luck, AC.
Yeah, man.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3 and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter, at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.